Good afternoon. My name is Steve Luckable, and I'd like to welcome you to the Staff Recruitment and Retention Community of Practice Number 3 webinar. This one's centered around hiring the right fit. This webinar is brought to you by the Partnerships for Care HIV Training, Technical Assistance, and Collaboration Center, HIV Tech. The Partnerships for Care project is a 3-year multi-agency project funded by the Secretary's Minority AIDS Initiative Fund and the Affordable Care Act. The goals of the project are to expand provision of HIV testing, prevention, care, and treatment in health centers serving communities highly impacted by HIV, to build sustainable partnerships between health centers and their state health department, and to improve health outcomes among people living with HIV, especially among racial and ethnic minorities. The project is supported by the HIV Training, Technical Assistance, and Collaboration Center, HIV Tech. Our speaker again today is Ann Hogan. Ann has over 25 years' experience in the human resources field, including training, employee relations, benefits and compensation management, conflict resolution, and employee development and strategic planning. Ann is a certified senior professional in human resources through the Human Resource Certification Institute and is a professional member of the Society of Human Resource Management, the American Society of Healthcare Human Resource Administration, and the American Society of Training. Ann is a graduate of the Metropolitan State College of Denver with a Bachelor's of Science in Management and has a Master's degree in Education and Human Resource Studies from the Colorado State University with a focus on organizational performance and change. She is also a graduate of the 2011 University of Washington Community Health Leadership Institute Certificate Program, and in 2012 she completed the Geiger-Gibson Fellowship Program through the George Washington University. Please join me in welcoming Ann Hogan.
Steve, that's great. I just want to thank everyone for participating today. This is going to be a great webinar talking about staff recruitment and retention and the importance of that and kind of some tools and tips on how to actually do that for your patient care team. So, and some of you may be in HR, some of you may be a nurse, some of you may be a physician. It doesn't matter what your role is within the health center, still you have an impact on the recruitment and retention. And so we will talk about how your role fits into all these different pieces. But first I start with a quote from Jim Collins, and that is, great vision without great people is irrelevant. And that is so true, because if we don't have great people on our staff and serving our patients, then we really don't have much of a vision toward our healthcare. So just remember that quote as we go. Now what we're going to cover today is the hiring process and what that looks like and how all the way through the selection process. So we're going to start with no discrimination. We're going to talk about what that means. Also, your needs and your wants and how important it is when you get to the point of recruiting someone for your patient care team to know what your needs and wants really are. And then how to source that candidate. And that's a tricky one, right? It's hard to find that right perfect fit, but I'll give you some tools to be able to do just that. And the interview process, the importance of using the interview process effectively, because that's really where most of us, and I've done the same thing, right? You just want to get somebody in the door. You need help. Well, the interview process will really weed out those that should be on your staff and those that should not. It's not a crystal ball, so sometimes you make a mistake, but overall, that interview process really is and should be given the time that it should have, I guess. It should just really be a process, not just a quick little interview of 15 minutes and be done with it. And then on the selection process. So we'll go through those different areas on this webinar this morning. Okay, no discrimination. Now, this goes for anyone involved in your interviewing process at all. I don't care if they're answering the phone. It doesn't matter where they're at. They need to understand these rules. Now, do they need to know them in depth? No, but they do need to understand what is the no discrimination. And it obviously goes beyond the hiring process or the recruiting process. It goes throughout that whole life cycle of the employee. So we're going to talk as it pertains to your recruiting process. So you have employment laws. Make sure that all your processes align with those employment laws, right? So your ads, the way that you're speaking to people, your interview questions, all of those things have to align with the employment law. And never assume that your interviews know how to ask what questions. They just don't know. A lot of times when I've spoken with people, they feel like this is the first time they've done an interview. Or they're concerned, can I ask this question? Will this question get me the results I want? So make sure you have an interview guide available. And that's always important to do. So hopefully your organization has them. If they don't, suggest that maybe that's something that you can work on over the next year or so with your interview guide. So the important thing is, obviously, there's federal and state laws also, but here are some of the big federal laws that you everyone needs to be aware of. And that is Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That protects race, color, religion, national origin, and sex from ever being discussed during the interview process or any time, really, during someone is employed. The Pregnancy Discrimination Act of 1978, you cannot discriminate someone based on someone because either they are pregnant or they have the ability to become pregnant. You can't do that. We actually had a situation a few years ago where we were hiring a COO, and we had a lady come and apply, and you could tell she was obviously pregnant, and she was due in about a month. But we had already gone out without a CEO for several months. So we're looking at this going, oh, boy, she could go another 3 months, right? But she was the best candidate, and we knew we could not discriminate based on her pregnancy. And it's a good thing that, one, it never happened because we knew better than that. But second of all, she had a fabulous COO. So don't assume that just because someone's been gone, you can make accommodations. You can do that. So remember the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. You cannot discriminate based on pregnancy. The other one next is the Age Discrimination Act of 1967. Anyone over the age of 40 is protected. It's a protected class. So make sure you're not doing age discrimination. And right now, actually, in this kind of current environment, there's a lot of baby boomers that are looking for jobs. And some organizations are not really taking into account their experience and what they bring to the table. You may not get them for the lowest rate, you're correct, but they do bring an awful lot to the table, and don't ignore that. And again, you can't discriminate based on anyone over the age of 40. The Disability Act of 1990, of course, disabilities are protected, and you have to make reasonable accommodations within your organization for someone with disabilities. Additionally, the Genetic Information Act. So you cannot use genetic information in any of your hiring processes or to eliminate people out of that process. Of course, there's fair pay for equal work done, and Family Medical Leave Act, which probably most of you are fairly familiar with, and that allows people to be gone from their position due to illness of their own or someone in their family for up to 12 weeks in that year's time period. So that's not so much in the hiring process, but it's important to understand that. Also know that state and local laws may take precedence over these federal laws because they actually may be stricter. So make sure you're aware of your local and federal and state laws. That is always important when you're going through that process. So what are you looking for in the position? This is where you really need to spend time, okay? You need to realistically look at what is the education that's required for the position on the patient care team. What is really that education level? Now, in healthcare, there are certain education levels or certain licensures that people have to perform certain jobs. But if it's someone on your patient care team, maybe more in an administrative role, what kind of education do they realistically have to have? Do they have to have a bachelor's degree? Do they have to have a high school diploma? Always think about the minimum that's required. And don't make it so high, because then if you get a great person that's maybe two classes shy of getting their, you know, if you require a bachelor's degree and they're a semester away and you've required it on your job description, then it's a little bit more difficult to maneuver. So make sure you're looking at that education and saying something to the effect of high school diploma, bachelor's degree, preferred would be an alternative to that. So look, always write that in your lowest denominator, I guess. So education, what does it really take? How much decision making does this person really have? Because too often we kind of advertise this job where you get to make all these great decisions and you're really in charge, and the reality of it is you aren't. So think about that decision-making process. How much decision-making do they need to be able to have? How much can they decide, really, within the role? And think about how we're going to get that information. If the job requires a lot of decision-making, how are we going to formulate that interview to find out if that person really has those skills? So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then the role. What is their real role in the organization? What are their actual jobs going to entail? So think about what that is. Because you can look at the job, and sometimes we get real nitpicky about certain little details of the job. But that's not the overall job. So, and when you look at your patient care team and your outreach, that's really important, right? The fact that they need to pick up the mail each day at the front desk, that's kind of a minor role, right? What you're looking for is someone who can interact with the patient, someone who can do motivational interviewing with the patient, someone that has those skills. That's really the nuts and bolts of the role. The role is not these little other detailed things. They might need to be detailed oriented in some way, but think about really what the role is. What are the abilities they need to do the job? What is their knowledge? And what kind of skills do they have to have? Think about each one of those separately and really dig deep into what that is. Because this is, and the physical demands of the job, this graphic here is really where a lot of people don't put the effort into what this really is, when the position, what the position really requires. And therefore, the position requires one thing, but they've hired for something else, and the two don't necessarily match. So think about really what that is. Now, I'm going to go through this in a little bit more detail, because this is really crucial. This is probably the biggest thing. These are the things that are not an education degree, a certain skill. These are those softer skills that either someone has or they don't have. They're really hard to train, right? You can teach me to do an Excel spreadsheet. You can teach me to do data entry. It's really hard to teach someone to be more outgoing and friendly than they already are. And so these are the things that you need to really focus on, also in the interview process. Because again, you can teach people a lot of things. You can teach me to draw blood. I may not want to do it because I don't really like to do that, but you could teach me to do it. It's a skill. But these other things, you can't teach me to be a problem solver. All right. You can help me gain those skills. But again, this is kind of the key to that hiring process. Don't leave these things out. So if someone's friendly, someone's outgoing, do you need someone who's detailed? Do you need a problem solver? Do you need someone who's analytic? What is it that you actually need on the team? Or do you need someone who's quiet and very detail-oriented? What is it that you're looking for that really impacts that job? So then we'll talk a little about candidate sourcing and where to find those candidates, especially when you're looking at your patient care team. The people that actually know, probably more people that would fit into that patient care team, are the people that are currently on it, right? So think about your network, not only your internal network that you have, but your outside network, right? This is a huge group of people that are collaborating on these webinar and sessions, and you've been together for several years. So think about your network and see how you can utilize that network to find the people that you need. Your online presence is crucial. I hate to say that, that your online presence is so crucial, but it really is right now. Because when you're candidate sourcing, the best place to go is your social media site. So we'll talk about social media here in a minute. But your online presence is very, very key. Are you utilizing career fairs and things like that? And are you using those kind of areas? So we have the career fairs. Those are huge. They really give you an opportunity to get your word out, get who you are out. And don't always attend career fairs just because you have a job opening. Remember, when you're candidate sourcing and you're recruiting, you're actually doing that all the time. It's a big marketing campaign, realistically. So make sure that that's always being done. So career fairs are important to attend. Any kind of community events are crucial. And not only speak highly of your health center, but also of the collaborative trainings that you guys are currently doing. And it allows people to find out, what are you doing for HIV training? What are you doing in educating the public? Because we all know that there's some stigma around that. So make sure you're educating people on these wonderful things that you're doing. And that'll really help with your recruiting process. Because, right, everybody wants to work at somewhere that, at least from the outside, it appears to be a great organization, right? So when you think of, like, the Apple, the Google, the Amazon, all those different things, none of us have probably ever worked there. But at least we think in our heads that those would be great places to work, right? Or we've heard about that health center that's got that awesome reputation. So you think about those things, and you have to actually build your reputation in the community with the event. Your current employees and your alumni employees are crucial to your recruiting process. So your current employees, the best thing to do, I mean, what I've seen that really works is offering some incentive, of course, to have them help you recruit. But realistically, when you look at who do you want to work with? right? You want to work with someone that you know. That's always nice, right? Someone you trust and someone you like. And so when you look at those things, your current employees are not going to, they are not going to refer a friend of theirs that they really don't think they can work with. They'll refer someone who they actually can work with. They're not going to refer someone who's going to make them look bad, right? So if they actually don't have the skills to refer. So think about that with your current employee. Can you offer them some kind of incentive in your organization that if they recruit someone, or at least they bring them into an interview, and they stay 6 months, can they split $500 or something like that? And then look at your alumni employees. And I hope that all of you are keeping track of your alumni employees, because those employees are now kind of your advertisement and your advocates out in the community. And so if you let your alumni know, hey, we have an opening, and of course, if they didn't leave on good terms, they're not going to forward your advertisement. But if they did, they're going to say, hey, I worked with this organization, XYZ, and they did a fabulous job, and they really helped the community. If you're interested, I think you should apply, right? So use your current and alumni employees. A lot of people don't use that to the extent that they really should. And then your website. You can always use websites to advertise on, Indeed, CareerBuilder, LinkedIn, utilize community members. Utilize all those things, whether it's your website, other people's websites, and also let your community members know. Because, again, community members want to help. They really do. And so they, again, won't refer someone if they don't think they actually do the job, which is really, really, really neat. Social media is always like, oh, I don't want to do it, or yeah, I want to do it, or you use it kind of as fun to keep in touch with family and friends, which is a great thing for social media, right? But there is actually 2 billion active users on Facebook. Let me say that again, 2 billion active users on Facebook. So how can you do an ad and highlight your health center on Facebook? You have to. You just have to be on Facebook and LinkedIn. And when it comes, I'll just talk a little bit about Facebook before I go to the other one. But Facebook, it's kind of becoming that place that, say you're booking a hotel in Orlando. So what do? You look online, right, and you look at the different hotels that you might like. And you look at their websites, probably. You look at their photos. You look what they do, right? What amenities do they offer? And then you decide. Maybe it's based on price. Maybe it's based on location. Maybe it's based on a whole variety of different things. But that's what people are actually doing with your Facebook page. They're actually pulling it up and going, oh, they're either saying, oh, they don't post anything, or they're saying, wow, that's really a cool organization. Look at this. They did a food drive. They did an education drive. Look at that. They had staff picnic. Oh, they're recruiting for someone. All different things. So look at your Facebook page as kind of that constant billboard that's out there that you have the opportunity to change for free. So think about your Facebook page in that manner. And it's always best to have consistency versus a lot of it. So if you have a lot and it's consistent, that's great. But don't kind of go in spurts. Don't just post like 5 things over 1 week and then skip for the next 4 weeks and then suddenly there's 5 more. Show a consistency. So if it's every 2 weeks that you post a community event or you highlight an employee, that's really good. If you do it every day, that's even better. But some organizations just don't have that opportunity. But just the big thing is that when someone goes to your Facebook page, it's like going to Yelp. I want to go and I want to see, what's this organization about that I want to work for? So think about it that way. And then LinkedIn. LinkedIn is crucial, especially in the care that you guys are giving, and it's a smaller group of people. But who knows more physicians, patient care managers, patient care coordinators, medical assistants, anyone who's on your team, who knows more people in that arena than anyone else in the health center? It's not HR. It's you guys that actually are doing that work. If you want to recruit an HR person, your HR person probably has more links on LinkedIn to other HR professionals. But if you're looking for a physician or a patient care coordinator or a nurse, those people already in your health center, make sure that you're giving that advertisement to your nurses, to your physicians, to your patient care coordinators, and they can spread it within their network on LinkedIn. It's a huge benefit. That's just some ways that you can get people that you really want to work for you. Google Plus is really just important that you have your website and things like that linked to Google Plus so that you actually can be found, that you actually rate some with Google. And then a Twitter account. If you have a Twitter account, we've all seen good ways to use Twitter and bad ways to see Twitter. But currently right now, if you want to advertise on Twitter, it can be just a good way to begin getting that information out, and it's free, and you control that message. So just be aware that people are looking at your social media, and especially new people that are looking at your positions that you have in your health plan. So when you're looking at your patient care team, make sure your social media information is accurate and correct and fairly up to date. But someone doesn't look at it and go, oh, the last time they posted was 2015. That's not okay, but make sure that that information is accurate and complete and fairly recent. Active versus passive recruitment. This is so important, especially for your physicians, obviously. But active recruiting is when I'm going to go out and actively look for a job, okay? That accounts for about 25% of the workforce, and that's what people don't realize. Actually, most people are passively recruited. So you may know someone who'd be great for your patient care team, okay? But they have another job, so you don't approach them. You know, it's, oh, they're happy at their other job. Yeah, so I won't let them know. But if you do something, you do passively recruit, say on LinkedIn, they happen to get the message from LinkedIn that says, hey, we're hiring. Those are the kind of, that's a passive activity. And actually about 75% of the workforce is actually recruited that way. And so think about it, even in your own self, okay? You may be perfectly content at your job. You may love your job. But if that perfect thing came across the, you know, your screen, would you at least take a look at it? And most people actually look. They may not ask, but they'll look. And so, again, recruiting is all about marketing. It's about getting that information out there. So don't be afraid to passively recruit. When you think about it, especially physicians are passively recruited all the time, right? You think about why the Merritt Hawkins, why those different recruiters are so good at their job, because they put together a really nice email that goes into all these physicians' boxes, inboxes. And when I talk to physicians, I'd say, I don't want to say most, I would say over 95% of those physicians all say they actually open those and look. So again, and they get probably 5 or 6 a week. So think about that. Think about, it doesn't need to just be for physicians, right? If you need nurses, if you need patient care coordinators, if you need medical assistants, think about how you're actually going to go about recruiting them. And it's not just an ad on your website or just an ad on Indeed or on Craigslist, okay? It has to be like this whole campaign. Here is a friend of mine who used to drive me crazy, to be honest, because we both were recruiting medical assistants, and he actually had the top workplace in Denver. And actually, he's got it now for 2017. And now he has 5 banners that cover his Facebook page ad. And, but it worked. It worked really, really well. So again, promote yourself. So he writes his ad very much that he's looking for a positive, they have a positive culture. And do you want to join one of the top workplaces in Denver? And they, you can see they've progressively got it for 4 years, and now the 5th year they've actually got it again. And this is a difficult place to work, just like most health centers. This is a mental health situation, and it's challenging. It's tough, but he is so good at what he does when he recruits that this ad works every time for him. So think about what that ad looks like, who you get it out to, and how it's shared. And he puts the same ad on LinkedIn. He does the same thing on Twitter. I mean, he covers it all. And he's been very, very successful with those ads. And again, I used to recruit against him. To some extent, we'd recruit for the same people. And those darn ads were quite attractive to a lot of people that saw them. So I had to come up with my own creative ways to kind of combat that. So just think about what that looks like. So when you look inside, again, this is a crucial point, because look inside. Look who's currently a really good employee. Do they have a friend that wants to work? You know, don't always look outside, because, or even, do you have someone who's maybe friendly, outgoing, has those kind of soft skills that you need? And again, can you teach them the other skills that are required for your care team? Think outside the box. And think if you can really do that, because you might have that person that you need already in your health center, and you can teach them the skills possibly that they need. Now, obviously, if they need a license or they need certain education, you can't do that. But really think about what it is that you currently have. Now, a bonus to recruiting, we talked about that a little bit. If you do recruit someone, can there be a bonus? It's much cheaper to pay that bonus to them than to other people, or to pay for pads sometimes. So again, look at that and say, can you spare $500 and split it, $250 between the person who recruited them in or referred them? And then if the person stays, say, 6 months, then we split $250. Again, look at those little nuances that can actually help a lot with recruiting. And again, people like to work with who they already know and trust. I mean, it just is kind of nature, right? You want to work with people that you like and that you can count on and that you trust. So again, you're not going to get your internal employee, current employees, to refer someone they don't like. It's just not going to happen. Very rarely will that ever happen. They want to, because whoever they want, it reflects upon them, for one. And second of all, they don't want to work with them they don't like. You know, you're spending way too much time with people. So usually those people that they refer, they've thought hard and a long time about who they're going to refer before they actually contact that person and actually put them into that pool. And again, use staff testimonials on your website. If you have a great organization, then tell everyone. Use those kind of staff testimonials on your website. And the only thing I would not do is I would not date those testimonials. Because the more you date on a website, kind of like, you know, if you don't post ever on Facebook, things like that, you just want them to be kind of infant, I guess. So you don't want to look like, oh, we just updated our staff testimonials again in 2015 and we've never done it since. So I wouldn't date the testimonials, but I would definitely put those on there. That when people go to your website, they can see what a great place this is to work. And so think about how you're going to do that. The interview process. This is where a lot of people just don't spend enough time on. And I really want to stress. I was sitting next to a lady the other day on a plane, and she worked for Apple. And of course, me being an HR, I said, oh, what was that hiring process like? And she told me all about it. She said, oh, it was so rigorous, and it was so tough. But she said, we don't have a lot of people on our team that actually don't work out long term. I said, oh, well, that's wonderful. And then she said, once in a while we make a mistake, just like anybody else does. But she said, it's so rigorous that they make sure that they're a good fit. And think about that with your interview process. Too many of us kind of want the warm body syndrome, right? We need some help. We need some help. We need it bad. And so we have a 15-minute interview with someone, and we go, yep, they're it. They're great. Let's go. We're going to put them into our system. And more often than not, that doesn't work out. You might get someone who can do the job for a little bit, but it's really not a good fit. So again, when you look at your interview process, think about that process. What personality is required, and plan the interview, really plan it. Do phone and on-site interviews. I definitely believe in doing pre-screening interviews with people. That way, you just kind of identify if it's going to work or not to go to the next step. It doesn't require them to come to you. It doesn't require that you block off an hour of your schedule. You can do a 15-minute or 10-minute interview via the phone and get a lot of information from people. And then structure the interview. Again, go back to those duties on that graph that we had that was in the circle. Structure your interview to address what it is that you really need from the position. And that is crucial. Make sure you really identify what is actually needed in that position. And what personality is required? Do you need someone who is more quiet and can really listen to people? Or do you need someone who's more outgoing and to greet people and to make them feel comfortable? There's kind of two different personalities, so think about which one it is that you're after. And that's okay. But again, you can always train skills for the most part. You can't change personality very easily. So just make sure that you're really thinking about how much personality should really fit into that. Now, when you're doing the interview process, behavioral interviewing is key. Make sure that you're asking the questions that you need to make sure that you're getting the information you need. So, for instance, if I just say to you, are you really good at customer service? The interviewee is going to say, yeah, right? That's what they're going to say. Now, if I ask you a behavioral-based question and I ask you a situation to explain when you've had really good customer service, and then I delve into that with what was the task at hand, what was the action, what was the result, using that STAR technique that we've talked about in previous webinars, when you start digging in with your behavioral-based questions, you'll actually get a lot more information versus a yes or no. Because the worst thing you want to say is, are you a team player? And they say, yeah. And then they find out that they're really not a team player at all. And there's some questions that would have helped you identify that. Don't ask a closed-ended question on something where you need a description from them back. I guess that's what I'm saying. So always take notes during the interview process. again, the interview process can be challenged. If someone doesn't get hired, they can challenge that actually in court. So make sure you have notes. You make it fair and consistent. And that means that you don't have to make it exactly the same for every interviewer, but you need to make it very consistent for each interviewer. And that means the same questions should be asked. Now, will you elaborate on some questions and go a little bit off track with certain applicants? Certainly you will, because maybe they've mentioned something and you want to delve into that a little bit more. So it may not be exactly the same, but it must be very consistent. And then probably one of the important things is be informal and to talk about how that goes with you guys. So when you look at the next, structure the interview, but yet have a little bit of a creative flair, right? So do team interviews. And that means make sure that people on your team, especially you guys are working in patient care teams, it's important they can rely upon each other, right? Let people have other input into who they want to hire, who would fit best on that team. Again, I know I'm talking about spending a little bit more time on the interview process, but in the long run, the interview process can weed out a lot of people. And it really makes you feel at the end that you've hired the best fit for your organization. Now, again, that may not always be true, but you have a much better chance of success if you structure the interview. With team interviews, welcome the candidate, make sure that they're actually welcomed into the place for their interview. The worst thing that can happen is that you have an interview scheduled for, say, 10 o'clock this morning, and you forgot to tell the front desk. And so the person walks in for the interview, and they say, yes, I have an interview with, you know, John Smith at 10 o'clock, and they say, oh, I didn't even know John was interviewing. I'm not even sure he's here, right? Again, you want to make sure everybody in the clinic knows you're interviewing, but when that person comes in and they say, I have an interview with John Smith, they say, oh, welcome. Welcome to our organization. Yes, they'll be right with you. Or something. You got to make sure that this whole process has to be a wheel that just works seamlessly, because you know, pretty much everyone has very low unemployment and there's not a lot of people out there. And so when you do get them into your clinic for an interview, make sure you treat them the way that they will be treated forever, right? And it shouldn't be a day process, right? So make sure you're always treating them well. So welcome the candidate. Make sure you tour the clinic with them. Now, this can be used as a really good recruitment tool, right? Some of the best interviews I've ever done have actually been driving between sites, actually sitting in the car, because it's with the person, because they feel like they're a little bit more comfortable, you're a little more comfortable, you're kind of get to pay attention to the road, right? So you're not quite just like sitting across from each other, staring at each other, trying to keep eye contact and trying to have an interview. The same thing happens when you tour the clinic, where you walk around and you introduce them to people and you see how they interact. And those are kind of the tricks to find out, is this person really going to work, right? Will they talk to people? What do other people think of them? Or maybe someone knows them from the community and says, oh, don't hire that person. I know that they have this problem and this problem. So, again, tour the clinic, make it a little more informal, and, again, let them interact with people in the tour. Let them ask questions. Make sure that they have that opportunity. Probably the worst thing that you can do during an interview is talk too much. Think about that. And in reality, you should only talk about 20% of the time, and they should be talking 80%. And again, we talked about this at the last webinar, but go through that webinar if you have any questions on that, or just put a question in here and we'll address it at the end. So let them ask questions. Ask them what they know about the organization, right? What is it that they know? If they have done no homework on the organization, or they haven't even pulled up the website, and they don't know your mission, they're probably not really interested in working for you. They just want a job. And that's probably not what you need. So, and ask them how they can contribute to the organization. What skills do they have that they can bring with them that where it fills one of your needs? And don't be afraid to ask questions like that. That's where you'll really get to know the person and find out if they're a real good fit. Now we'll talk about your application process a little bit. We talked about online advertising and the importance of that, right? And the importance of the word of mouth. But now, I want you to look at what does it look like for someone when they complete an application for your organization? And I really want you to think, is it easy or is it painful? Or do you even know? So if you've been working for the organization for a couple of years, you probably don't even know what the application process looks like for other people. But that should be checked out. 85% of all applications for a job are actually completed on a phone, right? We use our phones as computers now. That's just the reality of it. People don't have paper applications anymore. Some people do, and that's okay. But if you do have that talent management system or some kind of application system that's electronic, make sure it's mobile ready, because you need to make sure that people can just apply from their phone. Make it easy. And then what does it look like once they join the organization? So think about that. Do you welcome to the organization? Or do you just call up and say, hey, can you be here Monday at 8 o'clock for orientation? And you don't tell them anything about, like, well, bring your lunch. There's no place to eat around here. Or we're going to take you to lunch, or we'll be done at 5, or what to wear. Think about all those basic questions, and they're basic, but those are the things that are going through someone's head, you know, Sunday night when they're getting ready to start their job Monday at 8 o'clock, and it's much easier to make them feel comfortable if they already have that, you know, when they're coming in. And then once you have them join the organization, are you doing a good orientation process with them? Are you onboarding them to the organization or just to your team? Or are you just having them start work on day one and have them kind of sink or swim? Think about what it looks like once they actually join. So when we look at this, the post-interview, and especially with those people that are physicians, nurses, more that professional level employee, it's okay to do post-interviews with people that don't even get the job. And I mean that. I mean, you can learn a lot from those post-interviews. And the way you approach that is you say, when you're first initially, you know, start hiring someone or start interviewing someone, you let them know, we're interviewing for a good fit for you and for our organization. So we're not sure how that matches yet until we get through this whole process. But once we get through the process, if you are not selected, I would like to talk to you about what in the process we could do a little bit differently or better. And usually people would be like, oh, okay, I can do that. Because if you do it respectfully, they're not mad they didn't get the job. They might be disappointed because it might have been something they wanted. But at the same time, again, if you're honest about it, I'm trying to find a fit. I need to find a good match for both of them. They appreciate that too. And they know if it's a good fit too. So make sure you follow every applicant. And this goes for anybody. Any person that applies to your organization, and it doesn't, I don't like it, but I know it's the reality of the talent management system, is that they send an email, at least acknowledging that they got the application and what the next step is, right? The letting you can customize that message. And so you may customize it and say, you know, thank you for your application. We will review applications over the next, say, 7 days. And at that point, we will contact those that we want to move forward with. If you haven't been contacted within 2 weeks of this email, we have selected other people. At least something, because the worst thing that can happen, as we all know, right, if you kind of put something out there, you at least want to know it didn't go into, you know, the black hole. You want to know that someone saw something, right? And so think about how you're following every applicant. Be timely with that, because again, like anything else, right, if we don't like the meal we had at a restaurant, we're more than likely to tell a bunch of our friends when they decide to go there, right? Now, if we had a great meal at the restaurant, we may just kind of be quiet. Same thing with your interview process, okay? If they don't have a good feel during that interview process or post-interview, they're going to say to their friends, oh, well, I never heard back from them. Yeah, I didn't really want to work there anyway. I never heard back from them. And that's a negative towards you. So make sure you're getting follow-up with every applicant. Be timely. Communication is key. Additionally, say they go to the interview, they go through the process, they don't get the job, right? But they've learned a lot about the organization, they understand making, you know, a decision for best fit, and they may not have met that best fit. You know what they're going to say next time someone says, oh, wow, you know, I'd really like to work for XYZ. They're going to say, oh, you know what? I applied there. I went through the interview process. It was very professional. I would recommend that you do apply there. Even though they didn't get the job, they're your best advocate. But it only happens if you really spend the time in the communication process post-interview. If you just kind of like ignore and someone came to your facility for an interview and you just like never got back to them, and again, don't just rely on HR doing that. If you interviewed them, make sure you maybe call them back. If you don't have time, have HR call them back. But confirm if that actually happened, because that's crucial in that interview process, that you actually spend time in post-interview. The selection process. This is the last thing. So how is the selection going to be determined? Are you going to rate them on their education? Does that mean more than anything? And for some physicians, you're darn right. That means the most, right? They have to have certain things. They have to have certain education. For other things, it might be personality is key. The personality and their teamwork and their ability to work together, that's more important than anything. It might be that this person needs to work by themselves a lot. Like, they really need to be self-motivated They need to be detail oriented, and they need to be okay with like a quiet environment for 6 hours a day. So think about what it is that you need. Again, going back to that very, very first slide, rate each applicant based on the same criteria. This is crucial. Sometimes we fall in love with someone's personality, but someone else might be better for the job. So because we were not rating personality real high. So think about what those criteria are, right? Rate each person based on that, then make a decision. You can rate them. I used to use like a scale of like 1 to 5 on an Excel spreadsheet with the person's name. I'd have all my criteria up there and then start going through. And what it does is it makes it more objective for you. So that's what it really helps. Now, do you have to select the person that comes up with the most points or the least points? No, you don't have to. But you need to at least get some criteria listed that you can actually make an informed decision. Now, second interview, it's really important because it really depends on how strong your first interview process is, though. But if it's not very strong, if it's a 15-minute meeting and, it's just in between everything else that you're doing during the day, and you sit down and you ask some basic questions and they leave and you're like, okay, check them out, they're ready to go. If that's your interview process, you probably do want to do second interviews or you want to do team interviews. And always remember personality versus technical skills, because most technical skills you can actually train somebody to do. Personality, really hard to change. So those are my tips for today. That's the big thing. Personality is tough to change. So with that, we have about 7 minutes or so. Do we have any questions? And feel free to write anything in there where we can address it, or we can know for future webinars and we can bring that up.
We have a few moments here. If you'd like to ask a question, you can type it into the questions pane, or if you'd like to speak your question, if you have audio enabled, we can unmute you. Just raise your hand. Use the raise your hand feature and we will unmute you. All right, we have one. What role did you play in one of your better hiring interviewing experiences? Can you share a story from the field?
I would say, what role did I play? I played not many roles because I was in HR. But I would say probably our best experience, to be honest, was this one where we did the interview via the car. It kind of sounds like car karaoke or something. But it was actually a really good interview. And we did it that way because we were hiring for a CFO. And as we all know, most CFOs kind of are in their office working with numbers, working with budgets. But in our case, they also need to be really, really good with people. I mean, that needed to be a strength because they need to explain to everyone in our health center. We had 650 people and 14 different sites. They need to explain, why they couldn't necessarily get a new piece of equipment, or why the budget was this way and we couldn't give rates, or they had to explain the finances. They were in charge of that within our health center and that message. And so it was really crucial, we felt, that they had kind of that personality to go along with it. And so what we did is we actually scheduled the interview for a 4-hour block, which I know is a lot, but this was a senior member of our executive team. And we went around to 2 or 3 of our health centers, and one of our PAs was with me, and he sat in the back, and he had the questions, and we sat there and drove from site to site to site, and then also walked these people, and we did this for more than one person, walked these people through the clinic and had them interact with staff. And our staff was not shy, so our staff would just say, they would just say, like, hey, I need a new ultrasound machine. When am I going to get it? Or I need this fixed in our facility and it hasn't been, so when are we going to get this done? They would be very open. And we did not prep them at all. And so that was kind of my big one that I really felt really went well. Additionally, whenever I would hire someone onto my team or when I was involved in those processes, we always did a clinic tour. We did half the interview basically walking around the clinic. And that was just real interesting because you might stop into an office and say hello and introduce them, and you'd see how comfortable they were with people, whether they'd just like not say anything, or whether they'd reach out and shake someone's hand, or they'd say hello, or they'd greet people as you walk down the hallway. Would they say hello to them? Would they say hi to a patient? So those were all crucial for us. We really felt like it was important to get out of that, conference room with one desk and just look at each other across the table with a set of questions and write them all down. That didn't seem to get us who we were looking for. So that would be my notes from the field on that.
Okay, thank you. And what if you need to hire someone, like, reasonably urgently, and you have a hard time finding that perfect fit?
I think that everyone has that urgent feeling when someone leaves, right? There's a couple ways that I've done this. And one, if you're not sure if someone's going to be a perfect fit, you might want to hire a temp and kind of give them, you know, a temp role, and then you can see if they're going to work out or not, and then offer them a full-time role. Now, the bad part about that is that if they're a temp and they can also go look for another job, right? They have no commitment to you and none to them. And in reality, after that temp job has ended, you really don't have that either way either. You hope that you have commitment from them, and you hope that you're committed to them also. But in reality, you're not going to contract and say, I'm going to keep you forever and ever and ever. That just, you can't make that commitment. But I would hire a temp if you really can't find that person and see how they work out. I guess that would be my suggestion. Otherwise, really, you may have to hire someone fast, but that doesn't prevent you from using the behavioral interview questions. And at least then you might know where they're lacking, and you can help train those skills or that knowledge to bring them to the person that you need them to be. And if you're open with them and says, we really like you, we really think you have all the basics of what we need, but we still need to improve in these other areas, so let's do that together. I guess those would be my two suggestions.
Okay. If anyone else has any questions, please enter them now.
Feel free to, you know, let us know what questions you have, and we'll try to address those. But I think that it's important that the process of hiring, you know, I did HR, and, you know, I know how difficult it is sometimes to get rid of someone who you want off your team. And that can be a real challenge, too. So I would just say it's better to put the time up front, and in a lot of ways it's easier. I'm not saying it's not a job, but it is sometimes easier to put that time in up front, end up with the person that you need to have going forward, versus you have a bad hire, they end up on your team, you don't deal with the problem, it's been a year, and now HR is like, no, you have to do X, Y, and Z in order to have them exit the organization. So it's always easier to put in that effort up front and really structure that process. And even if HR doesn't, and if they don't have necessarily the ability to do that or the time to that, it won't take you that long to just put together your own interview questions, make sure they're not discriminatory in nature, but put together that format and utilize that really well on your interview process.
All right. Thank you for participating in today's webinar, and we hope that you're able to find the information provided useful as you continue your P4C project. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next time.